Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 2nd of July already. And it's time for All Things Political, which you always hear on Mondays at 9 o'clock. Linda Feldman is our guest this hour. She covers the White House from the Christian Science Monitor's Washington Bureau. She's been there for 24 years and has covered, obviously, several administrations. She serves as chief political correspondent and has covered all of the presidential campaigns since 1996. She has also worked as the Monitor's Moscow bureau chief. She has been op-ed editor, foreign affairs writer, and assistant international news editor, and worked at a Russian newspaper in 1987. We're delighted to have her here. She, of course, has written a bit, more than a bit, about what happened with the Supreme Court last week, and we will start our conversation with that and move into other areas as we proceed. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and you can also use our Facebook page if you would like, and that is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Linda, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Linda. Let me just ask if you were surprised by the ruling last week.
I was completely stunned.
Were you?
Oh, totally. In fact, my husband covers the Supreme Court for the Monitor, and he was at the oral arguments, and he came out of there pretty certain that they were going to at least strike down the individual mandate and the guarantees that go along with that. And indeed, it was apparently, you know, this is listening to Justice Kennedy, who was now very much on the side of the what turned out to be the minority in favor of striking down the whole law.
And the reports we were hearing was that he was pressuring Roberts. I don't know how you pressure another Supreme Court justice.
Well, I think you can make all the arguments you want, but at the end of the day, Roberts apparently seemed impervious to pressure, although who knows how many sleepless nights he might have had. According to CBS News, it went on for about a month. That Roberts had switched sides, and then the lobbying began.
And what made your husband think, and you said you were stunned, what made him think that it was not going to happen?
Well, there was just such tough questioning, and we all know that the Solicitor General for the U.S., Donald Verrilli, had a very hard time making his argument, took a lot of flack from the conservatives on the court, and just, you know, a reading, and in a way, my husband was right. I mean, if you look at the ruling, the Commerce Clause, which was considered to be the main feature that was being invoked to prevent the expansion, you know, to prevent the law from being implemented, that they did indeed find that the mandate was unconstitutional under the Commerce Clause, or at least Roberts found that in his majority opinion. So what he did was sort of a backdoor maneuver to get around the Commerce Clause and call it a tax, which I don't think anybody expected that to be the ruling.
Right. You wrote, and I can't believe, watching some television, not a lot, but you don't have to watch too much television before you start seeing health care ads like you would not believe. The money has come in for this. Is this going to continue? And how much money was Mitt Romney able to raise as a result of this ruling?
Right. No, this is just a huge political issue. This will be quite central to the election. It could fade going into November when the economy really is the number one issue. But no, the money, I mean, the Romney campaign took in the first 24 hours, they took in $4.7 million.
Wow.
And I understand that it's now over $6 million since the ruling came down. So this is a big moneymaker, I think, for both sides. The Obama campaign hasn't been putting out numbers the way the Romney campaign has, but I think it's energized both sides. I think for Team Obama, this was just a huge victory. And, you know, some people had argued that Obama could win from losing, that if he had lost the Supreme Court case, this would energize his base. But I think by winning, it gave him the aura of a winner. And it took away the Romney argument that he had basically fiddled while Rome burned in pushing for this health care reform while the economy was struggling so badly.
How does Romney use this as an issue when, indeed, it's kind of murky for him, isn't it? Because indeed, he did fashion almost an identical bill when he was governor in Massachusetts. How do you disassociate yourself from that?
Well, he can continue to make the argument that reform at the state level is completely different from reform at the federal level. This country is very much all about pushing as much power as possible to the states. I mean, we got away from that during the New Deal era with FDR, and you had a lot of big Supreme Court cases then around the ability of government to institute a social safety net at the federal level. So we're kind of used to that. But I think people may have forgotten that before FDR and the New Deal, we really didn't have a whole lot at the federal level in terms of protecting the welfare of the people, at least their health and their ability to have food and just survive, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So Romney can make that case, and he's all about what he did at the state level. He says it worked for Massachusetts. I mean, he hasn't disavowed his reform in Massachusetts, but he insists that this is not a model for national reform, and that each state has to find their own way. Of course, he is also has put out some ideas. I mean, people are saying Romney has no plan beyond repealing Obamacare, but that's really not true. I mean, he's saying that he would encourage states to, for example, experiment with high-risk pools that would offer subsidies to the poor to purchase health insurance when they are unable to afford it.
Well, do the Republicans need to come out very publicly with a very detailed plan at this point, Linda?
Well, I think some people think they should. I think the jury is out on what the Republicans need to do. I mean, the Obamacare remains, I wouldn't say it's completely unpopular. I mean, public opinion is mixed. I think most polls show that it's a little bit more unpopular than it is popular. But I'm not sure that we're going to see a huge plan, chapter and verse, sort of a mirror image of Obamacare. I mean, what the Republicans are saying is we want to repeal Obamacare completely, wipe the whole thing off the books, but they're not going to put in place some big, 2,700-page reform that would institute their plan. They think it needs to be done in small bits, judiciously, and the Republicans are divided on this. Some Republicans don't want any, as Steve King of Iowa says, none of the DNA of Obamacare should in any way be allowed to remain or come back to life if the whole law is wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
So you might, but you've got other Republicans, and including some in the GOP Doctors Caucus, who are like some of the provisions in Obamacare and want to bring those back in small legislation.
And what about the president? It seems to me as though this is, in some ways, a complicated bill. Has he done a poor job, as some have said, of selling this plan, of letting the American people know the details of this plan, and does he simply have to do that to gain more support for it?
I think what we're going to see, I think the administration has done a poor job of explaining the law to people. I think people understand some of the smaller pieces, some of which are quite popular. For example, the provision that allows people to put their adult children
yes.
up to age 26 on their insurance. The guarantees are popular that you can't be denied health care insurance if you have a pre-existing condition. Closing the donut hole in Medicare drugs. So I think what we're going to hear from the president is him continuing to emphasize the bits that people like. And now they have a new challenge. Justice Roberts redefined the penalty for not buying insurance. He called it a tax.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that feeds right into the Republican rhetorical arsenal that Democrats are all about taxing and spending. So we've had this kind of comical debate over the weekend of people like Nancy Pelosi continuing to insist that it's not a tax, that it's a penalty, even though Justice Roberts upheld it as a tax. So they need to be grateful for Roberts' redefinition, but they don't want to go along with the lexicon that he's brought with him. And you also have, at the same time, you have the Romney people basically saying the same thing, talking about Massachusetts. They don't want people to think that Mitt Romney was raising taxes in Massachusetts, even though they also have the penalty, which you can call a tax.
And the money, I want to go back to the money for a moment. Where is that money coming from that's going into the Romney camp? Who is so opposed to this that they really want to donate?
I haven't seen the demographic breakdown, but it's a lot of small donors, and this is really huge for Romney because he's struggled in terms of raising money from small donors, and small would be defined as somebody who's giving less than $200. But if you've got they're up to 6.7 million donating since the decision from 70,000 donations. That's maybe about $100 per donation.
Mm-hmm.
So this is big for Romney, not only in the actual dollars raised, but also in terms of just getting people's emails. I mean, campaigns are all about amassing lists of contact information for donors who then could turn into volunteers. So, because they're going to need people all over the country come election day.
And Linda, what about these exchanges? I was listening to a report this morning that talked about how some states like California are really very involved and already starting to plan their exchanges, where you have a state like Wisconsin where the legislature, unless they go into special session, won't be dealing with this until January. And the governor and other governors, too, of Republican-led states have said, they're waiting to see what happens in November. They, of course, are hopeful a Romney victory will prevail and that there won't be the Affordable Care Act anymore. Does it put states in a problem area if they don't get on this right now, or is it okay for them to wait?
Well, I think in terms of the exchanges, the law says that either the state sets up its own exchange or the federal government is going to do it for them. And I think I think states, especially Republican-led states, aren't interested in seeing the federal government swooping in and making decisions for them. So it's, it's an interesting dynamic we have here where the nation's going to be kind of a patchwork, it looks like, where you have states that are going full steam ahead setting up the exchanges. They have to be ready by beginning of 2014, so they've got about a year and a half to go. And then you've got other states that are kind of stonewalling this. Not only are they turning down the Medicaid expansion, but they're turning down exchanges as well.
Mm-hmm. We are going to welcome phone calls, and I know we'll have many of them on healthcare because there's a lot to talk about. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. I don't want to spend much time on this, but I found it astounding that two of the major networks got this wrong. What in the world? Why didn't they just take a little bit of time? Is the pressure so great that you have to race down the steps of the Supreme Court and get to a camera and just talk, even if you're not right?
Well, I think I would imagine that at both CNN and Fox, there was a lot of soul searching this past week on what went wrong. I mean, the way the decision was written, if you were just following along the reading of the decision and you heard them say the mandate is therefore unconstitutional under the Commerce Clause, you could say, oh, my goodness, that's it.
Right.
Mandate goes down. And because nobody expected this John Roberts workaround upholding the penalty as a tax.
Mm-hmm.
So I blame them for not reading the entire decision before they went to the steps of the Supreme Court and announced what had been done, but I completely understand how that happened.
Mm-hmm. Is Fast and Furious a big deal?
It is a big deal, especially for conservatives. They see, especially because of the fact that there's a border control agent was killed and that a gun from that Fast and Furious operation was found at the scene. I think for most people, it's not a big deal. But when the Attorney General was found in contempt by Congress, I think that escalated the whole scene. And a lot of people who weren't really paying attention suddenly woke up and said, wow, this is serious. I mean, this is the first time a member of the cabinet has been found in contempt by Congress. And so the question is now that, the Justice Department has said they're not going to prosecute him. So the question is, I guess it goes to civil action. So we'll see. I think what's happening is that the Republicans want to keep this issue alive because it makes the administration look like they're trying to hide something with these documents that they won't release. So the Republicans want to keep it alive. The Democrats want to stall and get this to go after the election so it doesn't become a big election issue.
Two phone calls momentarily. Linda Feldman is our guest, covers the White House from the Christian Science Monitor's Washington Bureau. She is a seasoned reporter. She's been there for 24 years, has also done a great deal of international reporting, and she is chief political correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor as well. Here's our phone number. We don't have any lines available. I expected that there would be many of you wanting to talk about all of the news of the last few days, but there will be openings. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org, or go to the Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and leave us a message. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, this terrific camp, Girls Rock Camp, and this one is based in Madison, although they're all over the country. Young girls 8 to 18 are taught about musical instruments, songwriting, self-esteem from female musicians in their community. They perform at the end of the week. And there's also one for adults, because those of us who are adults looked at this and said, we want to do this too. We'll be speaking with a Wisconsin musician who's the musical director of the camp and two of the young participants. So it's going to be fun. Hour two of our show. This hour, all things political. Linda Feldman, our guest from the Christian Science Monitor. Betty in Oak Creek is our first caller. Hi, Betty.
Thank you for taking my call. I just have a comment. I think we need a health bill, and I think it needs to be passed. And also, it's going to be one of these discussions and with the Republicans and the Democrats about the abortion and the birth control issue. I think you could look at it like this. If it were the Jehovah's Witnesses that said it's immoral to use blood transfusions and they wanted to take that out of the bill, could you hear the big outcry then? And that's my comment, because people decide for themselves which way they want to go. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Will there be challenges to the parts of the bill dealing with contraception?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we already have lawsuits have been filed, I think, by 26 Catholic organizations are obviously quite upset about the mandate that they have to provide birth control coverage on plans. And this isn't the churches themselves. This is schools and charities that are Catholic affiliated. So the thing about this Supreme Court ruling is that we usually think of the Supreme Court as the final word on an issue, but in this case, the issue is very much still alive, not only in the political sphere, but also just in terms of court challenges to pieces of it. And I think President Obama himself would say that the law isn't perfect, but at least it gets us moving. It gets us off the dime after decades of trying to take major steps toward universal coverage.
Linda in Monroe. Hi, Linda.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Linda. Now,
morning.
I think what Supreme Court Justice John Roberts gave the Democratic Party was a second chance to tell the voters how President Obama's going to pay for Obamacare. Now, I'd hate to hear them argue for 4 months, is it a tax or not, because I believe he said it was a tax. And the Democrats better get it right, too. Now, the Democrats said that the tax was going to be on the richest 1%, which it should be because it's based on ability to pay. Now, the Republicans are trying to twist that to make it sound like it's going to tax everybody more, which it isn't. It's not what Obama said. The only way the Democrats are going to get the message out, they're going to start a lobby group similar to what ALEC is to represent the views of the 99%.
Well, the whole thing about the tax is interesting. It's right that the president said that any tax increase would be on the richest 1%. But the thing about calling the penalty a tax is that it will be a tax on the not 1%. It'll be a tax on people who are in the 99%, because a lot of people who don't purchase insurance they're either young people or they're people who are kind of just barely making ends meet. And if they decide that it's cheaper to pay the penalty than to actually purchase insurance, that's a not 1% person being taxed. So the whole rhetoric around tax versus penalty sort of messes things up for the Democrats. But I'm with you. I hope we don't spend the next 4 months debating whether it's a tax or a penalty, because the reality is that it has created this way to keep the law alive, and B, it's just so much more complex than that. But the pay-fors are really critical, mm-hmm. because the nation faces a tremendously uncertain fiscal future. I mean, we are heading toward the edge of a cliff, not only at the end of the year, but longer term, as programs like Medicare become increasingly expensive and just basically threaten to take over the economy between Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. That's just growing and growing and growing to the point where it will just consume everything. So I think if Obama has won on the health care argument, at least for now, he still faces this larger issue of debt and deficits. And I think a lot of people are disappointed that he hasn't done more on this, that he didn't embrace the Simpson-Bowles plan and really begin to look specifically at what can be done to keep this nation on a healthier fiscal footing.
Linda, if it is cheaper to pay the penalty than it is to get insurance, don't you run the risk of the whole program unraveling?
Absolutely. I mean, this is one of the big questions, is how many people who are, you know, analyzing their own bottom line, do I just pay the penalty and remain uninsured, or do I bite the bullet and buy insurance? I mean, bear in mind, with these exchanges that are being set up in some states, it's not just you have to buy insurance, it's that you buy insurance and that there are subsidies on a sliding scale based on your income. So the federal government is trying to entice as many people into health insurance as possible. They're not just ordering people without giving them something to make it feasible, which is also what happened in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
But even in Massachusetts, you still have, I think it's, they got to 97% covered. So you still have 3% of the population that doesn't have insurance. Mm.
Why does the whole thing have to be so incredibly complicated?
Well, I think it goes back in a way to the fact that health insurance is a function of employment for a lot of people, which is kind of a weird way of doing it. I think Barack Obama said before he became president that if we were starting from scratch, he would do a single-payer system.
Mm-hmm.
Which is essentially the health care is your insurer. But he didn't want to blow up the existing setup, having it go through your employer. So it has turned into kind of a jerry-rigged system where you have a lot of people who get their insurance through their employer, and then you have other people who are self-employed and can't afford to buy insurance on the open market. So they're uninsured. And then you have, of course, seniors who are insured starting at age 65, and you have the most poor people who are receiving Medicaid. So I sort of feel like it's, for decades, our health insurance system has been held together by duct tape and chewing gum, and the president has succeeded in putting in place a system that will improve that, but still may not even get us close to universal coverage. With the one piece of the Supreme Court ruling that disallowed the penalties for states that choose not to expand Medicaid.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Linda, for your call. Barb in Wrightstown. Hi, Barb.
Good morning. I am wondering how many of the American public understand how this Obamacare is going to be paid for. I have heard very little information or discussion regarding it. I know, for instance, there's one clause that if a person sells their home for $250,000 capital gain or more, 3% of that goes to pay for Obamacare. Now, that may not be the general public in the United States. However, I would like to hear more discussion on just how will all these great benefits, some not so great, but how will all these benefits be paid for?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I don't pretend to be an expert on this. I focus more on politics than on the nuts and bolts of the American healthcare system and on the Affordable Care Act. But I do know that the part of the pay-for comes in savings that they would get out of the Medicare system. The plan is to get $500 billion out of Medicare. And that's something that the Republicans have seized on as as taking something away from seniors that they already have. And the administration argues that, a lot of this is savings that they would wring out of that system by making it more efficient. But that is definitely a big piece of it. And you know, the penalties will be another source of funding for the system. But you're right. No, I don't know about this business of selling your house for a $250,000 capital gain, if that's meant to pay for it. But there are, I mean, one of the aspects of this law that that a lot of people don't understand is that it does contain a lot of taxes, tax increases. You have the, there's the medical device tax, for example, that that they were fighting about on Capitol Hill the other day. So it's, I think the Republicans could get some traction by calling this a very, very large tax increase.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the economy for just a moment. I know you lived in Russia for some time and you're familiar, I'm sure, with what's going on in Europe. The news that came on at 9 o'clock this morning that the European unemployment rate is now 11.1% struck me as significant.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think more than anything, but a big factor in whether President Obama will be reelected is how the European economy is doing. If Europe... you've already have states that are in countries that are already in recession in Europe. I think in Spain, the unemployment rate is at 25%. So if the Eurozone wide is at 11.1, that means some countries are really not that bad off at all. But this is huge for the president. If Europe goes down, if Europe goes into full blown recession, that will affect us because the economy is so globalized. And yes, you know, you have to know that the president is watching that very carefully. And he, you know, he's talked about how he and his people are on the phone with the finance ministers of Europe. But you do have to wonder just how much sway they actually have. And he, you know, he's not going to be bailing out the European banks anytime soon. We can be sure that won't happen.
Mm-hmm. Janet in Richland Center. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I have three questions, I guess, and I'll try to make them quick. First of all, Ken Romney just came in and on his first day of office repealed the health care law if he were to be elected. Second of all, what about the people who have absolutely no income? I know people with no income, no unemployment, nothing. How do they get health care? And thirdly, someone I thought told me that some of the preventative tests, such as mammograms, pap tests, some of the other ones are free with this health care. That's part of it. Do you know if that's so, or how can you find out? I'll take my responses off the air. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Janet.
Yes, those are all excellent questions. First, can Mitt Romney, if he becomes president, repeal the Affordable Care Act? No, he cannot. What he can do and what he has promised to do is on day one, give waivers to all the states so that they don't have to implement certain pieces of it that are in their control. And what he's promised to do after that day one activity is to work with Congress, and he hopes he has Republican majorities in both houses to repeal the Affordable Care Act. So that's part number one. People with no income and are not who are not receiving unemployment, who don't have health care, I think those are the kinds of people who could apply for Medicaid. I mean, the Medicaid system does buttress sort of the bottom of our demographic scene. People who are really destitute can't apply for Medicaid. So that's I think the answer on that score. As for free mammograms, the law does call for free preventive services for a lot of cancer screenings, mammograms, colonoscopies, but that's for new policies. So if you have insurance through your employer, and you've had that insurance, it's a policy that's been in existence for a while. I think the best thing to do is just to call your health insurance company, call customer service, and ask them, okay, now that this is passed, what applies to me and what doesn't. Because I think there is some confusion about that.
And what sites do you go to, Linda, to get a full explanation of the Affordable Care Act?
Okay, my favorite site is Kaiser Health News. There's this entity called the Kaiser Family Foundation, mm-hmm. which actually is not connected to Kaiser Permanente. I should point out, it's completely nonprofit, wonderful news service that is devoted to understanding and explaining the healthcare system in this country, including the Affordable Care Act. So I would encourage anybody who wants more to go to kaiserhealthnews.org and just graze around and read up.
Yeah, and we'll be doing more shows on it, too. You can count on us to talk about this. We've talked about it for a long time. I want to move to the Democratic National Convention in just a moment. But I'm trying to think of a time in American history, and it might be worth our while to do a show on Medicare and what kind of hullabaloo there was about Medicare. But was there a big hullabaloo about Medicare? Did it take Johnson a long time to get this passed? Were people yelling at each other? Were What was the political environment then?
Oh, it was crazy. I mean, I was a very small child at the time. I was alive, but I wasn't paying attention to politics at that point. But, excuse me. Yes, I mean, every time we've had a major expansion of the social safety net in this country, we've had just huge knockdown, drag-out fights. FDR put up with that as well. And he faced just blood-curdling screams that he was a socialist and a communist, and that he was going to destroy the economy with all this spending to help people. But now, of course, with things like Social Security and Medicare, if you talk about changing that system, even the most hardened conservative Tea Partiers will say, you know, get the government hands off my Medicare, which I love because it's the government
because
program.
It's Medicare, right?
Yeah. But no, I mean, people, I think the Obama administration is counting on people getting used to, you know, over time, understanding what's in the law, the guarantees that come with that, the protections to people, and coming to realize that there's something in there for a lot of people, and that it might be something that they want to hold on to.
Except the major provisions don't kick in until after the election.
That's right. But I think President Obama is counting on people as this debate continues that they will become more informed about what's in the law. And you also see people who were against the law, and then suddenly they discover that they, you know, they've been diagnosed with breast cancer, or they come to discover a friend who has a child who faces a situation where they could use up their lifetime health care at age 3. And they realize that, well, maybe there are cases where this law will be very helpful to people who, through no fault of their own, could face a life without health care, which I think to most people is unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to John in Harvard. Hi, John.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First of all, you know, it kind of still amazes me how other people think that they should step into a woman's life and tell her what she should or shouldn't do with her body. But more importantly, aren't we living in a democratic society? Isn't that part of being in a democracy that, you know, some people are going to be less well off than others, and then you give them a hand and help them? If you don't like that, well, maybe a different kind of a country is better for you. You know, what people fail to realize seemingly, and it seems to be mostly Republicans or conservatives, is they're unable to put themselves in other people's shoes. You know, what if you were in that situation? God forbid. And finally, on that God topic, there's supposedly 26 lawsuits against pertaining to the abortion issue of this Medicare or Obamacare plan. I can't help but think, however, you know, it's going to go to one court and get appealed and go to the next. And when it gets to the top, is it going to come to the fact that there's no proof of a God, and therefore it's all going to get thrown out? I would love to hear your guest thoughts on that.
Thank you, John.
Well, on that final point, on the on the 26 lawsuits, I'm not sure it's going to come down to a discussion of God. I think it will come down to the First Amendment and the freedom of religion. Freedom of religion and the flip side, which is that the government can impose its views on religious institutions. And, you know, this thing about the birth control provision of the law, which is actually a regulation. It wasn't in the law itself. It was a HHS regulation that came out, I think, last summer, but only became an issue several months later. What can the government tell a religiously affiliated organization to do? And I think this is one of those cases that could you know, bounce up the chain to the through the federal courts and reach the Supreme Court, in which they'll have to decide what can the government tell not a church but a religiously affiliated organization like a school or a charity to do. So this that could be a landmark ruling, in fact. And on this issue of a democratic society where people are helping others, I think this what we've seen really is a stark example of just two different governing philosophies. You know, the Democrats are more inclined to say, you know, we as Americans, we're all in this together. Some of us are less fortunate than others, and let's help those who are less fortunate, not by giving them just handouts, but by giving them a hand up and help them at a time when they are really most vulnerable, whereas Republicans are more focused on individual responsibility and, you know, kind of being self-reliant and self-sufficient, and that if you're if you aren't able to provide for yourself, then you just need to work harder, I guess. I don't know. Let's see. What else? Yeah, I guess that's it. You were talking about this inability to step into other people's shoes. I think, you know, the problem is that we see examples all the time of people taking advantage of Americans' essential good-heartedness, that we have set up these social safety nets for people. And that, and then you have, you know, bad guys who basically go in and steal the money. You have a terrible situation in Florida where you've got these, it's become more profitable to engage in Medicare fraud than to deal drugs. And so all the whole drug situation in Florida has now turned into giant Medicare fraud mills where people, they get hold of Social Security numbers and just send in these fraudulent bills and just rake in the money. I mean, millions and millions and millions of dollars it's being stolen, and the government is aware of this and they're trying to crack down, but it's very difficult because there are obviously a lot of legitimate people sending in for reimbursement. So it's this is a case where we need government to get bigger in terms of enforcement and cracking down on fraud.
And you do have to ask yourself the question, because how often have we seen stories of people without health insurance whose neighbors, God bless them, get together and have huge fundraisers to pay for the cost of treatment for cancer? It's not really the way things ought to be done. You can only do so many fundraisers, right?
That's right. And not everybody is so fortunate as to have that kind of community network,
right,
that's willing to step in and raise money on their behalf.
More phone calls momentarily. All Things Political is what you're listening to this hour, the second day of July. Linda Feldman is our guest, and Linda is covering the White House for the Christian Science Monitor. She's based in Washington, the bureau there. She's been there for 24 years. She's also chief political correspondent. She's covered many presidential campaigns, and she has a lot of international experience as well. She was the Monitor's Moscow bureau chief and foreign affairs writer, op-ed editor, and assistant international news editor. Here's our phone number. A couple lines are making themselves open to you right now. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Email, we haven't had any of those. Feel free to use it if you'd like. talk@wpr.org, or you can leave messages on the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this 9 o'clock hour, we'll be talking about the just-held elections in Mexico. Returning to phone calls now for Linda Feldman for All Things Political. Hugh in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi, Kathleen. I heard earlier a number of people saying that mammograms and so forth will be free. Of course, they won't be free. The taxpayers will be paying for it. This has been declared a tax, and according to Rush Limbaugh, this is probably the biggest tax increase in American history. Somebody has to pay for it. Obama, even under this Obamacare, is moving money from Medicare to Obamacare. It's moving coverage from one group of people to another. It's a disaster, and, you know, it's of course, the taxes don't really go in until after the election. This is what the Democrats do. They think it's a good deal, and then suddenly you have a monstrous thing where we will have death panels in the end. But I really called to talk about Holder, Attorney General Holder, this guy under Obama. He was voted in contempt of Congress, not only by the Republicans, but by 17 Democrats who feel that there's a cover-up going on, and it's a cover-up with executive privilege, a la Nixon. You know, we have this Obama administration, not only corrupt. Holder, you know, went to Florida and tried to prevent them from eliminating the illegal aliens from their voting rolls. They're going to use scams. They're going to use corruption to win. They've already used, even in 2008, the new Black Panther Party was intimidating voters, and Holder dropped the case against that party. President Obama has been on a platform with new Black Panther people, and their objective is to exterminate the white race. Such a racist, horrible administration. It's unbelievable. Gun running, which this Fast and Furious thing, which resulted in the death of a Border Patrol agent, should be investigated thoroughly. And if it goes up to Holder and Obama, they should, well, I won't say impeached. That would take too long. Let's get him out in November.
Linda.
That was a very succinct, I think, summary of a lot of the conservative arguments against President Obama. I don't know what to say. This issue of free mammograms, he's right that there's nothing free in the healthcare system. Somebody does pay for it. Some people are predicting that the cost of healthcare will go up because of all the mandated requirements in there that it will make healthcare unaffordable. It will completely destroy the system. We'll see. I don't know. Who knows what will happen? But I think you can definitely argue that President Obama engages in a little bit of sort of loose language when talking about free coverage for this and that, free birth control, free mammograms, free colonoscopies. These are all expensive items. Somebody will definitely pay for it.
And in terms of the Fast and Furious, we need to do a show on this, I think, coming up. But there also was this Fortune investigation, which has been getting quite a bit of publicity over the weekend, which says that conventional wisdom is wrong, that the ATF agents never intentionally allowed guns to fall into the hands of drug cartels, that it was a rogue agent here, that it's not that big a deal. But Hugh brings up this point of 17 Democrats voting against Holder. Why did they do that?
Well, I can't tell you who those 17 Democrats were, but there are Democrats in conservative districts who don't want to lose the election. They didn't want to put themselves on the record as supporting an unpopular attorney general. So I'm sure that in part explains that vote.
Let's go to Kenneth next in Janesville. Hi, Kenneth.
The reason the Democrats voted was because of the NRA. But I wanted to say I was 22 years old and a soldier when Medicare passed, I think in 64. The Congress was Democratic. The Senate was Democratic. You had Lyndon Johnson as the president. You had to really be paying attention to know that Medicare passed because the baby boomers were in their teens. There was a war going on. A little bit before that, Kennedy was assassinated. And there was no hullabaloo about Medicare in 64. The baby boomers didn't care, and there were very few old people. And and you had the master ringleader Lyndon Johnson as president. It went through. I mean, the civil rights bill created more of a hullabaloo than Medicare did.
You think that's true, Linda?
He's right. I mean, certainly the Civil Rights Act was much more controversial, and I think my suspicion is that Lyndon Johnson was able to get so much major legislation through is because he had sort of the aura of Kennedy, of the slain president around him, and that gave him a lot of power, which, of course, it dissipated by 68 when he opted not to run again.
Thanks for the call, Kenneth. Liz in Madison. Hi.
Hi, yes. I want to make a comment that gave him about the...
I can't hear you, Liz.
Issue.
The what?
That I think is being ignored, that I wish politicians would really address if they had the intestinal fortitude. And the example I want to give has to do with my very, very sick dog recently who needed a certain medication. And the major chain in this country sold the medication for $255 a month. $255. The vet hospital sells the exact same thing for $15 a month. Now, that the outrageous greed that illustrates is what is really, really behind our health care problem. I'll take your comments then offline.
All right. Thanks, Liz. Uh-huh. Linda.
So, if I understand it right, she's saying that a medication that her dog needs sells for humans for $255 a month, but from the vet you can get it for $15 a month.
I think that's what she was saying.
Okay. Well, I mean, that just shows you. I mean, we also have situations where you can purchase certain medications outside the United States for a fraction of what it costs in this country. And I guess it's just an example of how the market is so distorted for medical items, whether it's medication or procedures. I mean, I know that there was an article in the New York Times the other day about you could go to a hospital and interview five people in a wing who were in for the exact same operation and ask them what they were paying for that, and you get five different answers depending on what kind of insurance they have. So, I mean, this is, you know, you think Obamacare is complicated. Look at just the overall healthcare system in this country is so complicated and so, in many ways, distorted by a lot of different factors, by subsidies, by the deals that insurance companies cut with doctors and with hospitals, and adding the dimension of animals and what we pay for animal medication versus human medication is another thing. Although it seems to me it would be kind of risky to, you know, get your meds from a vet to give to a human. I'm not sure I would go there.
Right. Let's talk just a little bit about what John Roberts did and the role of this court. As everybody well knows, the American public's opinion of the Supreme Court is not very high. Does this strengthen our opinion of the Supreme Court? Do we look at it as looking at law and upholding what's right and striking down what's wrong?
This is, I think, actually an important part of why John Roberts ruled the way he did. We've had some reporting out today indicating that he intended to vote with the conservatives and strike down the law, and then, you know, had a change of heart, decided that he could call the penalty a tax and therefore uphold the law. I think what Roberts was doing, I mean, we haven't heard from him what his thinking was, and we may not until, for many decades, but that what he was doing was upholding the institution and maybe trying to buttress public support for the Supreme Court by not having the usual suspects vote for the conservative position, which was to strike down the entire law. That John Roberts is very much, as the Chief Justice in particular, believes in supporting the Supreme Court as an institution and fighting against this idea that it's become super politicized, beginning in 2000 with the Bush v. Gore decision, and then more recently with Citizens United. I mean, the liberals in this country had their talking points at the ready. They were anticipating that this law would be struck down by the conservative five or six, and that this was going to be, the five conservatives, that this was going to unleash a torrent of rhetoric against the court as a bunch of conservative hacks who were just supporting the Republican position without regard to what could be found constitutional. So I think, in a way, the Supreme Court has dodged a bullet.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that would preclude Roberts from talking?
No. I mean, he could tell us what he thinks. I'm not sure he wants to go into all the machinations behind the scenes about being lobbied, which is what we've got Jan Crawford telling us via CBS.
Yeah.
So he could certainly explain his thinking, but I think the Supreme Court has a certain, it's meant to be the least political of the three branches, and I think he maybe doesn't want to go down the path of over-explaining, because then you get, you know, it sort of takes some of the kind of privacy of the court away from it. They're, you know, they don't have cameras in the courtroom, and not all the justices think that's important, but I know some of them do, that it's important to keep the court as sort of this quiet, somewhat secluded arena for thought away from politics.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think your husband should ask for an interview at least, don't you?
I'll suggest that.
Yeah, we'll see what he says. And then you could report it too. Linda, thank you so much for being with us. Pretty darn busy times for you.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Linda Feldman, who covers the White House for the Christian Science Monitor, and she has been based for 24 years in Washington at the Washington Bureau. She's also chief political correspondent and has covered many presidential campaigns. She's worked internationally. She was Moscow bureau chief for a while and op-ed editor, foreign affairs writer, assistant international news editor. Thanks to Brett Jaspers for producing this hour. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. A reminder, tomorrow during this hour, the elections in Mexico, fascinating elections, took place over the weekend on Sunday, actually. And so we'll talk about the results and what it means for our relationship and for immigration and all of that tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Another hour coming up.